welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. My name is Adam Cook and I haven't frozen in time. I'm just giving you the thumbs up. Episode 452 as I tip my cap to you. And it's only me and one other person this week. You've got a personal two-person podcast. He hates me and I hate him. Only joking. He's all right, really. It's Chris Hyde. Hello, Chris.
Hello. Hello, mate. You're all right, too. I think you're just all right.
I'm just all right. It's just us, mate.
I know, dream team, it's dynamic duo.
It's happened before.
It's like the new Ant and Dec.
I don't like that. I'll just say that off the bat.
The new Chuckle Vision.
Don't like that. Nope.
Well, you're gonna have to pick some. What would you accept?
Can we not be the Rick and Aid? Like it feels like that was the.
Does
mean that you're Adrian Edmondson, so you've got to straight away shave the Barnet off.
Well, surely you're closer to being him.
That's really, nearly dead. but Rick Mayall's dead, so I'm nearly, I'm closer
I was saying you were nearer.
No, I know what you were saying, and I don't think it was very
actually,
nice.
I'm saying I'm nearer dead, which is worse, I think. But, yeah, I feel we need to move on or we offend each other.
We should... I mean, we don't always do breaking news, but at the time we're recording this, it's literally just Steam, or Valve rather, have decided to just say like, hey, remember that thing that Gabe Newell alluded to at a conference? I know it was a con, I think, where he sort of alluded, you'll hear more about us on consoles next year. Well, they've got one, and it's basically the Switch Pro. It's crazy to think that Valve is that... I mean, of course they are that big, but it's crazy to think they're that big that they can just go... Yeah, we've got a console,
and it's like, yeah, it's almost like the arrogant lack of fanfare or pre-hype and everything else.
Yeah,
it's like the reverse of any other company. Any other company would be teeing it up properly
for weeks. But at the same time, what they're doing with how you get hold of one is probably something they have like gone, oh, we saw all this with Sony. And so what they've done is you've got to log in with your Steam account. You've got to pay a reservation price. It's £4. So,
right.
And then on, which you can do, well, it'll be in past when you hear this on Monday, but on Friday it went live. And then in December you're going to be able to actually pre-order. It's kind of like, one, they'll know how many they need to make. By the way, how crazy is that? You know, in a world where you can't get hold of GPUs and you can't get hold of this and like no one can buy a PS5, Valve are just going, we're just going to decide that we're going to make a new thing.
Yeah.
It's a handheld. It's basically, like I say, it's basically a Switch, but with like three options, and there's a £349 one, and then it goes four something and then five something, and you know, incrementally, and like the storage goes up, but also at the mid-tier model you get like an SSD NVMe. One of these I can actually show you, one of them, like that is an NVMe hard drive. I don't know if that's going to really play on camera too well, but like it's really small. There's really small little thing there. And that's like what I've got on my PC, or you can put inside hubs and stuff, and you're going to be able to play all your Steam games on it, just like a handheld. Oh, the other cool thing, you can buy a dock, which will probably be, you know, reasonably priced, I'd have thought. But you don't have to. If you've got a USB-C hub, you can just... And, yeah, something you can't do with a Switch.
No.
Buying one or two?
It certainly sounds like... It does sound good, doesn't it? I have to say. It would be... What not to detract from... Not to detract from that, but it makes it really interesting what do Nintendo do now to not make...
Yes.
And it, because as much as the OLED is a thing and looks nice...
Which do you want more? I know the answer by that smirk alone. It's the OLED, isn't it?
No. I think the thing is, probably not, because like I said last week when we were talking about it, when I need a new Switch, I'll get the OLED. I'm not the three Switch family like you are.
But, like some people.
But but I do like that. But I do feel like it's not... We know it's not what everyone was hoping the Switch Pro would be because of the whole 4K thing that everyone was hoping
for. Maybe
they
knew this was coming.
Maybe.
Because
you
that would make
know.
A lot of sense. I mean, you know, Valve keep things pretty close to their chest.
But if they knew they couldn't compete, then don't invest in all of that stuff.
Well, what they've put out, they haven't like detailed the specs, but they have really, I mean, they might have. By the time you read this, it'll maybe there's, you know, stuff I've not seen. But they, it does seem like a decent machine. And it, I mean, the only thing I would say about it from the initial kind of like, oh my God moment as I calm down a little bit is that it's interesting how and who they will market this towards. Because unless they've got something lined up, we don't yet know, like, hey, we're going to be getting this exclusive or this because it's now a TV sofa console thing you can dock and play like a Switch. Maybe they are courting people like that, developers. But otherwise, they are basically saying, well, you don't have to worry too much about a library because everyone's got this massive Steam library already. And the one thing that has stopped me playing PC games in my lounge is that I have no, like, the TV behind me, as people can see, I have occasionally plugged a laptop in when I'm reviewing it to there, and I have a cable running all the way around this room. That's not ideal. It's okay for here, but in your lounge, no one wants a HD, you know, a 10-foot HDMI cable trailing, and you're not going to do wireless HDMI and all that lot, but that's the only reason I don't sit like on the sofa there and play PC games on a big screen. The only reason.
Yeah.
And this eliminates that. Now it's here or there whether you want to pay that much money for that luxury, because it's a luxury. It's a luxury. But then we'll say we don't know about games wise what they'll
No. And I think a lot of people have put a lot of stock in the portability aspect. Of it, you know, I can't remember exactly what we were talking about last week about whether what people value portability over not, but we've had lots of conversations in the past. I know a lot of people, what they've gone after, right? They've clearly, you know, the Switch has been a success, not just because of the Nintendo catalog, but because of the portability. And it's to the point where people would rather play Switch versions of games. Yeah, Monster Hunter Stories 2, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about last week, do you play PC or Monster Hunter Stories 2 on Switch? Well, if I had the choice now, I've got Monster Hunter Stories 2 sitting in my Steam library.
Oh, you bastard.
Do you know what I mean? I'd be like, thinking that one example.
And you've got, obviously, Steam Cloud Syncs. Like, you can, and it also, I wonder as well, because if it's running on their own OS, like, again, I've literally got a laptop here off, but it's a laptop next to me. And when that boots up, because my Steam account's there, you get a message in the like corner of your screen saying desktop or laptop blah 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 is available, so you can stream. Whatever. If the game's not installed on there, it's installed on here, so you can do that. And that would be really interesting because you could set it off to download, but just start playing it from your own network, which you can do via a Steam Link. And now I've got a good internet connection, but I've always found streaming that way plays up. Like I've tried Stadia, and I've tried all sorts of them, and I've tried like Xbox, not xCloud, the actual streaming from your Xbox to your phone. I've always found it to be quite successful. And PlayStation similar. Steam's just never seems to work for me like that, and it's supposed. I don't know why. I mean, I've tried it. I tried playing Bethesda game. I can't think which one it was called now. The sequel to the one that it made. And it's all colourful and bombastic, and it's not Doom, but it's that kind of game.
I was saying Doom, and then you said colourful and bombastic, and I was like,
it's really going to bug me now. It's really going to bug me, but it doesn't matter. But yeah, Steam Deck. Deck. Not to be confused with Stream Deck, the software. Deck.
That was originally what I thought you said, and I was like, I know what that is. We've got a couple of comments. Deadbeat Punk said, if you can hack that sucker to play GameCube games, that thing is bought. Just going after, I think, the virtual console stuff we were saying last week about what we want in a Switch Pro, I think that's based on that. Phil Tindall's then just literally listed all the specs, I think.
Yeah.
I won't read out.
So the specs is really interesting to me because it's 2.4 to 3.5 gigahertz CPU. That's interesting because it doesn't specify on the website, I'm guessing that it goes up as it
scales up. But
that would put me off the lower end model, a 2.4 gigahertz processor, quite a bit actually. I mean, 16 gig of RAM, and then obviously you've got the hard drives. I mean, the thing is, again, and Phil Tindall's there in the chat and says the same, is that the PC games can be massive. So a game like Doom Eternal wouldn't even be installable on a 64 gig. But I know you can actually expand it same way as a Switch with the micro SD card. So that's, look, at least there's options.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a bad option, is it? Let's be honest.
I'm not being funny. £569 for essentially a portable gaming PC that isn't a laptop and is a console-style hybrid handheld with an NVMe storage, and presumably that's the 3.5 CPU. I'm not going to go, oh, that's cheap, because we're just sort of in the middle, or depending on who you ask, at the end of a pandemic. So, like, people haven't got money to throw at things, but £569 is, I think, reasonable for what you're getting. Mm. Assuming it's not trash, and I suspect that Valve aren't going to, you know. And I mean, even the dock, looking at it now, there looks like there's not only a HDMI port on it, but a DVI out as well as Ethernet, and three USB ports, as well as what looks like a USB-C or a micro. Even that is, like, that's a substantial hub. Like, yeah. It's tiny, but it's got a lot on it, you know. Like,
yeah, they've packed it in.
Yeah, that's kind of mad.
Because the Switch has only got, like, HDMI and USB-C, hasn't it? But then they've swapped it for LAN, haven't they, in the OLED?
In the OLED, but they haven't. Yeah. They've swapped it so there's only one USB at the back of it now.
Yeah.
So and the irony being is that you could actually get a USB LAN adapter for the Switch.
Yeah.
So what they've actually done with that is they've swapped it, but they've actually removed it in a way, because you could just have bought that Wi-Fi adapter and kept two USB ports.
Yeah.
I've never had a problem with Switch's Wi-Fi.
To be honest.
So I get it, if you were in a competitive Smash or something, you'd want that wired connection, but not for me. But yeah, there you go. You know, so breaking news on the God is a Game podcast. You know, there's the Steam. I nearly said Link. Steam Deck. I'm not sure about the name, but I don't think it will matter. Video games that are out or are coming out. Where do you want to start, Chris? What do you want to talk about?
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to go first. I'll start talking about that.
If that's what you want to talk about.
Let's tease and come back to it. I'll go first with what I've been playing, and then you can. We'll build up to the
I just feel
crescendo.
Like I've talked a lot earlier about PC
cool.
stuff. So go on.
So what I've been playing is a preview build of King's Bounty 2. Mm. The first sort of 10 hours, we'll say, before we say anything else, obviously it's a preview build.
In a preview sense.
Not the finished game, but the first 10 hours of this game. And essentially what it is, it's in a fantasy setting. It's a fantasy adventure. Like third-person adventure game, a bit like, you know, sort of Skyrim and The Witcher, wander around, you can complete quests with NPCs and stuff. But then the combat in this game is turn-based strategical combat. So that's kind of links the two together. So it's not like free-flowing combat. It's turn-based in a hexagonal kind of field. So it kind of interchanges between the two. And I'll start with the story stuff and come back to the combat in a minute, but just wanted to tee that up. So as I said, the game's set in a kind of fantasy world. There's a choice of three.
It looks kind of Dragon Age-y in the footage.
I got very much like a little bit of Dragon Age, a little bit of Witch, a little bit of Skyrim kind of mixed together in terms of a vibe. It doesn't feel as vast as, say, Skyrim. Although, having said that, I played for 10 hours, and from the map that I could see, it was about, I'd gone around about a quarter or a third of it, you know, back and forth doing the quests and following things. So there's going to be plenty of game time in here for people that I would imagine that want to, when they get to the full game. But the sort of, the idea around it is it kind of sets its stall out, kind of brings in the notion of these four, what it calls ideals. Okay, and it's what the, kind of a lot of the world is built around. Okay, so these four ideals are basically two sets of two opposing ideals. Okay, so you've got you can either have an ideal of order, or the opposite would be anarchy. So you could either be, you know, you could either, if you imagine there's people like, you know, soldiers that are kind of, you know, or probably like lawful people that do that, whereas you might have like assassins and thieves that would go more towards the anarchy type ideal. And then the other two are, you might go for a power play or more of a finesse play. So you get people like brutes and barbarians go more for the power, maybe sort of mages and things would go more for a finesse. And so there's basically four different ideals. And the way the game plays out is you go on, you do quests, either in the story or there's lots and lots of side quests that you can pick up through NPCs and texts and everything. And you'll get to a point in these quests and there'll be two solutions, of each of opposing ideals. You might get to a solution and go, you can either take you can play the power play or you can play the finesse play and you can choose, or you could choose the anarchy or the order.
Sounds Paragon and Renegade.
It's a bit Paragon and Renegade because my wife's been playing Mass Effect, so we've been talking about the nuance to it and the similarities. But yeah, I guess it's like four rather than two, but it's essentially that. And if you choose, a bit like in Mass Effect, if you choose that solution, you get points in that kind of ideal, right? So you've constantly got a running score of points in four ideals. And then the way that you as you level up as a character, you get points to spend in various kind of stats and bonuses and stuff, but you can only unlock certain bonuses if you've got enough points in that particular ideal, right? So you have to have a certain number of points in a certain ideal to unlock that bonus. Okay. So it's kind of like almost like a locked skill tree, if you like, until you've got accrued a certain number of points. Which is an interesting thing, and we'll come on to a bit more of the ideal stuff in a minute. It's an interesting thing, but you know me. If I was ever to play Mass Effect, I would be the paragon through and through.
You would not be able to choose bad stuff.
I would, as much as I'd like to see someone be an asshole, because I'm sure the cutscenes are funny, I would always pick the nice, good option.
And it arguably makes the game more boring in some element. I mean, that's something I find interesting. Like, can you make... Like, I can't role play as a bad guy because I'm not a bad guy. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that if you can, you're a bad guy. I'm just saying I can't. I can't do it even in a fucking video game.
Yeah.
I can't be bad. It's pathetic, but keep it interesting for me. You know what I mean? Keep it.
Yeah. So I'm exactly the same. So I'm in these situations where I'm like, okay, I'm going to pick order rather than anarchy because I'm going to pick, which is in my mind is the good option because I don't want there to be anarchy, right? So whenever I'm given that option, I'll go, right, I'll go and speak to that person, which is the nice solution, and not go and speak to that person, which is the bad solution, right? So that's how I'm doing it, and I'm accruing these points in order. Mm-hmm. And normally, in any game, you'd be fine, but I was about halfway through, maybe even a bit more than that, of these 10 hours, I was like, just skimming over some of the anarchy buffs, and I'm like, they sound amazing. Like, that would really help me out. Like, I'm struggling in this area, that would really help me out. And so I wrote this in my preview. I was like, it actually feels like the best thing to do is to mix it up. It is to be an arsehole some of the time and therefore maybe just do the solutions that you want to do, not the ones that you think a character that you're trying to be. Because that's the case what I do when I'm in a role-playing game like that. I kind of go, I'm going to be a good guy in this game, so I'm going to do all the good things. Actually feels like, you know, it's better to mix it up in this, because then if you get a balance of points, you can, you know, get the right loadout that you would work for you rather than anything else, which is different, I think, to how most other games do it. It tends to be more just like you see different cutscenes or you see different outcomes, which is absolutely true in this game. You know, you literally see different things, go down different quest lines, things get locked out if you choose certain. That all happens here. But I thought the idea of not being able to have certain bonuses and stuff was a bit of a good and a bad thing, because I tend to just pick one, and it feels like that's, you can certainly do that, but it felt like I was like, I'm going to have to cause some anarchy in some of my other decisions if I want to unlock those other things. So, but that's a really interesting dynamic. And then the other thing that I'll talk about, the main thing that it does obviously is the combat. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the combat is turn-based combat, and the way it does it is you're never actually in the combat. You're the kind of the captain leading the units, if you like. So you're kind of standing on the edge of the field, giving commands to your army, and you're fighting against other enemies. And it's always marked out on the map when you're wandering around the villages or the landscape when you're about to go into a fight, right? So you never just wander into a random battle. It's like there's like a ring. If you enter that ring, you're like, okay, you're going to go into a fight now. And you can always back out if it looks like it's going to be a bit too tough, so you can come back to it later or whatever. So it doesn't ever throw you into something that you're not, you know, throw you into a fight and then you're just going to lose and all your army dies. So that's, I really like that. It's a good thing. You can always back out and come back later. So yeah, so you control an army, max of 5 units that you can choose. You can hold as many as you can in reserve, and so you can pick and choose. Oh, I'm fighting against these type of enemies there, or in this situation, this might be better. This makeup of units might be better for me. You know, it's the standard. You've got melee, you've got range, you've got magic users. They each have different stats, which means some of them might move first in a turn. All that sort of stuff. The things that you probably expect. And a lot of the different units have different skills you can use, either stronger attacks, some of them might heal or put buffs or debuffs on enemies or whatever. So there's quite a lot of tactics to it. There's like line of sight and elevation for ranged units to think about and all that sort of stuff. So there's quite a lot.
Is it out? Like,
it's out in August, I believe. End of August, I want to.
Makes sense.
So it's quite close to being kind of finished. So the battles take place in turns, and there's quite a lot going on there. The ideal thing that I mentioned earlier is also plays into the battles as well.
Okay.
Because if you have an army made up of each unit in the game is aligned to one of the ideals as well. So if it's a noble soldier, then it might be to the order ideal. Like I said, if it's an assassin or something, it might be more to the anarchy. If it's a wizard, it might be towards the finesse. So if you've got an army that's like a hodgepodge of different ideals, their morale will be lower and they won't fight as well as a team. Whereas if it's all of the same, then they'll fight better. So there is also that kind of tactical element to it as well. So that kind of ideal thing is not just for your character, it's for the army that you choose as well. So there's quite a lot of tactics going on. And I will say it did take me a little while to not understand it, because it is quite simple, and it does that whole thing where it shows you when you want, if you like, you go to attack, but before you actually say yes, I want to attack, it tells you how much damage you'll probably deal and receive and all that sort of stuff, so you don't make mistakes. But you know, learning the intricacies and tactics does take a little bit of time, but it certainly doesn't feel like overwhelming. But it does, I felt like by the end of the 10 hours I was bossing it before, where obviously when you start you're like, oh god, what's going on here. The one thing, and I did mention this in my preview, that I did find is because we had a hands-off preview of this a little while ago, and I did a write-up for that a couple of months ago, I think. And the developers there were talking about, oh, you can have literally infinite reserves in your army and literally pick and choose the best things. I never found I never had enough units, because when they die, your units, they die permanently. And if you've got like a group of, I don't know, say you've got a group of 6 wizards in your group and 3 of them die, then you've got to re-recruit the other 3 if you want them to be at the max power, right? And all of that costs money, which you can find in the world. You get it for quests, and you can find it in little treasure chests and various caches that are dotted around the world. And you know what I'm like. I am a pixel hunter. I will travel off the beaten track every inch to try and find all of those. And I was doing that, and I was still finding I didn't quite have enough money to have like a massive reserve. I ended up basically just restocking almost the same 5 that I started with, you know, and they'd level up and get stronger, so it was fine. But I didn't find like, oh, I can just drop in these now because they'll be really good. I just didn't find I had enough money. Now, I don't know if that's because I was just being really bad at it at the start, but that was the vibe I got. So it'd be interesting to see if that happens in the main game. But I will say I said this in my preview, the time really flew. Like I was really, when it got to like, I couldn't do any more because the game locks you out. It says behind this door is the rest of the game almost, and you can't get to it. And it gets to the point where all of your quest markers are behind that door, like the other part of the world that you can't get to. So I was like, I've literally done everything that I can do here. I've done all the quests, progressed them as far as I can. And it was 10 hours. And I was like, but if I found myself like, oh, I didn't want it to end, which I think is a really good, for me anyway, like a good...
it's a good sign if you wanted more.
Good indication. If that's the kind of, I would say, if you know, the kind of game that you're looking for, obviously fantasy setting, but you know, strategic combat, it's a very good example of it. It's got a lot to it. A lot of the Some of the quest lines are a bit bland. Some of them are very interesting. It seemed to go from one of the, which I think you always get. You always get the mixed bag of go and speak to that person and all their problems are resolved versus go and explore this dungeon with lots of intrigue and, you know, uncertainty. There, you know, so it's, you get a bit of one and a bit of the other. But certainly found that the quests were varied. A lot of it was voiced, which I know in this day and age sounds really like a weak positive. But like, as an example, when I first started the game, I chose one of the characters and you start off in prison. And literally the first thing you have to do is you get released and you have to wander down the corridor to meet up with the jailkeeper or whatever. And there's literally no collectibles or anything on the way. It's literally just a load of cells. And you could literally just walk and, you know, carry on with what you're supposed to do with the rest of the game. But me being Pixel Hunter Hyde would just kind of wander, had a look in all the cells, see what's going on. And there's just random NPCs having full-on conversations, fully voiced conversations that you don't have to listen to. You only find them out if you go right up to the door and look at them. It's not like they're kind of beckoning you or anything. So you could literally miss all this kind of level of detail that they've clearly put in that's voiced. And I was like, that's really interesting that they've gone to that level of detail for something you could skip over. I think there's a lot to this game. It's a little bit different from other like games of the genre that I've played. I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to playing the full game in a month or so's time.
Yeah.
Well worth one, I think, to keep your eye on. I don't know if it's your bag.
Too medieval, if that makes sense. Like there's certain, I don't know what it is, because like, you know, Witcher, I dig. But then saying that, I didn't really get into the Netflix show. Like, I just.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I watched like an episode and a half and I was like, this is all right. I didn't feel like it was this amazing thing people were raving about. And, you know, like, I mean, in terms of like that sort of, I guess, oldie worldy thing, like, you know, Castlevania, I enjoyed like the Netflix version of that. But again, it's a bit more. It's an anime, isn't it? It's just not. I'm not usually into the kind of knights, swords and shields and magic, and like the last time I enjoyed that sort of thing, I guess, was Discworld. But let's move from a game like you had to play for preview to a game you had to play because I kind of forced you to.
Yeah, well, you didn't force me, you offered it, and yeah. I said yes, but you didn't force me. But I think
I can't use that as a podcast title. That's too much.
What did you force me? Like, State of Decay 2.
Yeah.
So I didn't play this when it came out. Shocking no one that I haven't played a game that everyone else has played. But, so you mentioned it that you'd gone on and were trying the multiplayer aspect of it.
I've tried it on and off.
Yeah.
Since it came out. Like, it was really buggy at first.
Right.
And it still is quite buggy. But like, it has clearly had work done to make it run better. Like, I'm playing on PC, I think you were as well, but it is cross-platform and all that with Xbox. It sort of, the core feels the same, but also it feels like they've come a long way as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, my impressions of it, the core combat I love, because I've said to you before, smacking zombies in the head with a crowbar, that's just golden gameplay before we start. So I was instantly in once I knew that was going to be part of what we were doing. You know, the whole sort of like dying light catharsis of that kind of stuff, just messing about with that. So that's there. And that's still really enjoyable. And there's enough. I feel like whilst it is a little bit, it's clunky in the sense that, you know, something like Dark Souls is clunky in the sense that it's not, you're not rolling around like, you know, like Bloodborne or something, but there's enough like skill to it in terms of there is a dodge move and things like that, and you can upgrade and get different unlocked a combat move as we were playing, you know, so there's enough there for you to feel like, you know, you're not just mashing attack, you know, that you can kind of consider what you're doing. So I really enjoyed that part of it. Obviously the driving around to various places to try and complete the missions that we're on, again, smacking a zombie down with a car door, again, that's good gameplay for me. The thing that I did struggle a little bit with, and I think it's because I was in your game, is the I'm still not 100% clear on the base building aspect of that game.
Yeah, you're not allowed. That's something I was really hoping was different, because I think I should be able to almost set privileges for when I invite and say, like, now this guy I trust who's not going to troll or anything, and he can go and do the base building stuff. Because it's like, yes, it's nice to play with your friends, and you know, you're essentially a helper.
Yeah.
And you're essentially a human controlled NPC.
And God, does it remind you of that numerous times? Yeah. It kept coming up with little pop ups going, just so you know, your role in this is to help the host.
Does
and
it?
I was like, yes, okay, yeah, I'm going to be nice. Don't worry. I'm going to put stuff in the boot of the car. I'm going to give it to him back at the base. Don't worry.
Like,
I know
if you weren't talking, if we weren't chatting the whole time we were playing it, and it didn't have your name above your head, I wouldn't have known that you weren't just one of the followers, AI followers, because you can't do anything else.
No.
Like, you can pick up stuff, I guess, but so can they. And you can go over to them and hand stuff to the AI, to, like, if you're full and you brought someone with you, you know. I don't know.
For me, I think, like, I will be really clear with everybody. I literally went in, did the bare bones tutorial, and then we literally, as soon as we could do multiplayer, we did. So there's probably a lot of explanation around base building that it gives you in solo, but that I just didn't know. But I do think that stuff, even you were saying, well, I'm not sure.
Me in that I haven't done the tutorials since it came out 2 years ago or more, actually, at this point, it might be more. Just can't remember. But it's kind of, once if you can see what I can see as host, it's fairly self-explanatory. You just have to hover over it and it tells you what to do. But it's just, it's kind of brainless, and I'm interested to see where they go with the third one. Because they just showed that CGI trailer that suggested it was more. Because it's kind of like State of Decay is kind of what you get if you take all the humor out of a Dead Rising and all the story out of The Last of Us. And then you're left with a game where you go around doing hunting and gathering. But the idea is just propel yourself along by doing missions. But they're kind of like, do this, help this person, do that, whatever. We might be your friend. Maybe we'll come join you. And then it's like I still think it's a sort of 6 or 7 out of 10 game, even with the improvements, because there's just something missing. There's something quite addictive, but it's kind of like, once you put it down, there's nothing to make you go, oh, I really must get back to it. It's kind of just...
I do think as well, the vibe I got, like, it was interesting because we played it and I was thinking about it the next day and I was like, do you know what? If we played that again tonight, I'd be up for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if we don't play it for 2 weeks, whether we fall off it and that's it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? And
I
do think it's one of those where if you go with it, it can suck you in. And you could end up going, oh, this is what we need to do to get the best thing for our base, and we need to go here and we'll do that, and it'd be great. And then in the meantime, we're just smacking zombies.
I think the fact that you can never see that, you can't even see it, is like, it's not going to give that thing of, right, Astroneer was my save game, but it wasn't like, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Minecraft. If with Minecraft, I know you haven't played Minecraft, but with Minecraft, you can set those privileges so that you can, like, make sure if your mate does come in, you can't troll your world and destroy stuff. But equally, you can make it so that if your mate comes in and you trust him, it can be our world.
Yeah.
And it's missing that.
I think as much as the gameplay is good in the sense of, you know, you both get in a car and you go to a place and you're working together, I do think that type of game also would probably welcome, do you know what, especially if there's four of you, two of us are going to go off and go and do that separately. I'm going to almost be separate.
And you create your base over there, and I'll have my base here, and that's what they should do with a three. But then two was apparently once upon a time going to be an MMO, I think.
Right.
And obviously they were a small studio and they got bought by Microsoft, so it'd be interesting to see what three is. But I believe there were plans to be more online than they are.
Because I think, like, we think about when we played, like, Astroneer and stuff like that, it was like, literally, you could be like, I haven't seen Chris for about half an hour. What are you doing? What have you been spending your time on?
You could go to another planet.
I don't know if you can
leave town and that, because there are other towns. I don't know if you could. It'd be interesting to finish the mission we were on, which looks like it will allow you to then move to another area. And it would be interesting. But then I was in the car as you were driving and I couldn't switch to another of my community because I was in a car.
Yeah.
Now,
which implies.
But what if I'd got out the car? I would have been interesting to know if I could switch away and you were just driving off. I think you would be fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would like to just have a little bit more time with that game because there's something there. But unfortunately, other things have taken my time up this week, this month, really.
What are they?
They
Mr.
would
Cook?
Be Skyward Sword or Skyward Sword HD.
Sword, is that what we're saying?
Sword HD, yeah. I didn't like this game in 2011, right? I'll be honest with you. I wasn't the... For all of everyone loved it, I wasn't the biggest fan of the Wii because I've never... Certainly at the time, maybe I had less patience. Motion controls weren't my thing. Like, they just weren't. And the Wii's raison d'etre was that, and it made, like... when you play Skyward Sword, even with the controls, there's a... You forget how much of it is motion-based.
I think, yeah, I think I liked the Wii, but it was interesting. My beloved franchises in Nintendo, when the motion controls got particularly shoehorned into them.
Well, it was Motion Plus as well, by the
motion
way.
Motion Plus.
You had to buy an accessory to play that game.
I think the first or one of the first Motion Plus games.
No, I think Wii Sports Plus, wasn't it?
Maybe.
Or Wii Sports Resorts.
Yeah, Wii Sport Resort. But like, I always found that the games that didn't shoehorn, I found myself, which is weird because you're like, I enjoy the non-shoehorn game, and this was very much, you have to play this motion control. Like you said,
it wasn't shoehorned, it was built around it.
It's built around it, whereas, you know, maybe less
like,
so in some other.
From throwing a bomb overhead to a rolling it, for the, like being able to roll a bomb and... And I actually think that now I've given it that time for reviewing it, you know, now in the modern day, like I think that some of the design is way ahead of its time. So clever. Because also in this the fact they've removed a lot of the tutorial stuff, like a lot of it doesn't need tutorializing.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're told you can roll a bomb. You're told you can throw one. And then you'll come across things that you know instantly. If I roll the bomb, it will, you know, because I'm rolling it, it's gonna go up and back down that hill, and I can use that to my advantage. Yeah. And you're discovering secrets and stuff, and it makes you feel clever. And that's I think the important part is what I finally now understand everyone's going on about these dungeons and stuff. They make you feel clever. They give you every dungeon gives you that moment when you're like, oh, I get it now. And I will say, like, the only disappointment for me, and you're actually seeing a bit of this on screen now, is that this is when I was just testing it to see for sure, is the only disappointing thing to me is that they don't go just that little bit further with the controls, because you can play in motion controls or you can play in handheld controls, and both are great and they're both valid. But I wish there was a hybrid mode where the sword fighting I want to do with motion, I want to get my shield out, I want to do all that. But when I'm flying around in Skyloft, I don't want to be... you know, tilting the motion controller. Like, I don't want to be, oh, it's tilted that way and then this way. And that. I don't want to. Yeah. And like when I'm controlling the Beetle, I don't want to be tilt. I don't want to be doing it with that. And you don't have to. If you put it back on or you pick up your pro controller, you can then go back to the controls. But then you are back to holding down left to move the camera. And the camera thing's a big deal. Like, it's a big deal. And I think is the deal as to why I liked it so much at the time. Because I don't think fixed cameras work well in 3D games. It was not fixed. It does move, but you can't move it. It's like you press LZ now, and it does the lock-on thing. If you tap it, camera's behind you.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but having the right stick to be able to just move the camera is like, yeah, this is a modern video game now. The difference between this being a 10-year-old game and a modern video game is the right stick. There's a right stick now. And at first I was a bit like, I don't like the fact I have to hold down left or left bumper. What do you call it? Just L, isn't it, on Switch? Just L. Mm. The left, but the bumper. L1, essentially. I don't like that I have to hold that down to be able to control the camera. And initially I was like, well, why can't they do it the other way? And like let the camera be on the right stick and let left bumper, essentially, be... I want to use the sword.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't work. This game is built around the fact that you are non-stop using your sword for everything or an item that requires you to use the motion or the flick of the stick. It is built around that sword being instantly accessible, and like there's from the very earliest mission as to finding your loft wing and having to cut him free. Like, it is built around that, to the, you know, even then from then when you get out of Skyloft and to progress up a hill you have to chop the trees down. Like, it would be more annoying to have to get your sword out.
Mm-hmm.
And people will be saying, oh, why can't you just put it on the face buttons? Wouldn't work. I don't think people remember or know that this is not a game about just slicing side to side or up and down, right? There's diagonals. It's all involved. Yeah. It's everything. There is no... You know, like, there's even puzzles where you have to use the motion of circling your sword to distract people. Like, it is... And that's like the first dungeon. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's consistent like that through the game, and I don't think there's another way they could have done it, actually. I don't think there's any other way they could have made it work than this way.
Yeah.
And I love it. Like, I feel like such an idiot, man. I would have given this... If this game let me, control the Beetle or the Skyloft stuff or some of the other motion control stuff with my left stick or right stick, well, it'd be left stick, I'd have given this game a 10 out of 10. Because the other thing is as well, and I don't know if this is just my brain, I don't know what it is, but I think this game looks damn sharp. Like, there was no point where I was like, yeah, this feels like an ancient game. I mean, it runs at 60, and the art style is such that it feels modern.
Yeah, I mean that is true. It's not quite Wind Waker-esque in terms of timeless visuals, because that kind of stuff can't age. But you're right that whilst at the time I think people probably thought, oh, it's a little bit of a backward step versus the ultra real Twilight Princess.
Yeah, no, super visuals. Smart though.
It's interesting on looking it through this lens that those kind of visuals actually stand the test of time better rather than being revolutionary for the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
This game for me, you know, I've said to you before, it's the only 3D Zelda game I never finished.
Yes.
And I remember really enjoying it up until a point. And so for me, I remember vividly thinking that, and it's probably young, stupid me and that kind of stuff. But I remember just finding certain aspects of it, Fee being one of them, but also disconnected nature of the world was another thing. For some reason, I couldn't let that go when I probably should have done. You know, firstly, the sky feels empty versus any comparable measure like the sea in Wind Waker or anything like that. For me, it's, you know, you've got the central sky loft and then just all the little rocks with treasure chests on them. And that felt empty and devoid of anything versus the great sea in Wind Waker. And then I remember feeling, when I think back on my reflections, I remember thinking that the areas, there's three separate areas, right? They obviously were very disconnected, whereas obviously historically Zelda's tended to be one glorious world that you can ride around. And for some, I think that
that doesn't bother me.
Yeah, and I wonder if it would bother me as much now, which is why I'm saying it, because I wonder if I went back playing it now in this version, whether I'd actually adore it.
Like, I didn't go too deep into it in the review because I didn't want to incite anger, but you know what? The more I played of it, the more I felt like, I feel like they were laying early groundwork for Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Because, or the difference being is that this does have a soundtrack. Well, the Breath of the Wild does, but this has a soundtrack, and it's probably one of the best soundtracks.
I will say I said that to you. The soundtrack in this game is outstanding.
It's one of the best
I've
heard in a
really
long time. Because I never heard all of it. I didn't play. I really didn't like this game. I can't stress that enough. There's definite breath. Like, you know, the stamina bar. When you're sort of running and stuff, and it's like, there's early things here. And now they've pulled the tutorials back a bit, and they really have, by the way. Like, the video they put on Twitter, like, that's a great example, because originally you had, like, a tutorial for your stamina, for jumping and all that. Now it's just like, hey, if you push those boxes together, you can jump over, and you do it, and it's like, oh, done. That's all right. You know, you're out of Skyloft well within an hour, whereas I feel like it took me, like, 2.5 when I first played it.
Yeah.
You know, taking that stuff away, Or rather, removing it from the forefront so that, like, you can still target an enemy. You press down on the D-pad and Fee will come out and be like, oh, looks like this enemy's this, blah, blah, blah. But you haven't killed any of them yet, so I'm not entirely sure. But try this. And then as you know, that progression, silly little things like when you get, like, an item or a bug that you've caught before. Once you've caught it once and been told what it is, and it's shown you, it goes in the box. But you catch a butterfly later, it just goes ring. It's just in there. It's just.
Oh, I see. Because that was
that's all
where
gone.
It was like, oh my god, I found another blob of earwax. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah,
like,
it's the 50th one. Yeah. No, that's gone off. Again, like with all Zelda things, like, you know, holds it up. You know, the first time you get one, it explains it, tells you what it is, there's text on screen, blah, blah, blah.
Because they even did that back in Wind Waker's time. That, I think, again, if like in Wind Waker, like, they you'd find a new item and it'd be like, and then it would just appear as a little icon above his head once he runs into it.
And that's what they do now. Like, you catch a butterfly and it would just goes into your inventory. Like, it's...
Yeah, that's much better.
You know, I mean, hopefully, if I remember correctly, I did catch some here in this bit of video which was written on screen. I find the net incredibly unwieldy. Like, whether I'm using the... I know you can upgrade it, and I did upgrade it eventually, but the early parts of the game, like I don't know. I just...
It's no Animal Crossing, is it?
It's actually got more controls than that, but like...
Yeah.
But like, if I can just catch this butterfly, there you go. So, like, that's the first one I caught. So you get that. You caught one blessed butterfly. These are insects are commonly found in every province in red cases. So you do that, and it shows you it, and there it is, and that's it. And now, I don't think I actually caught another one in this bit of footage. Once you've done that, it's not going to keep showing you that. Because why would it? But it did. It did used to.
Yeah.
And peeling all of that back, peeling all of the tutorials, peeling all of the kind of forced hand-holding, which I understand why they did it at the time, because the Wii was a console for your mum, your grandma, and your kids. Yeah. And it was hugely successful because of that. But even that, then, it was unnecessary. And peeling that back means it's got that kind of discovery.
Yeah.
Which I think it lacked, because they were so much like, do this, and this is
they were
this.
So,
you know,
Nintendo went through a period where they were so scared that they would lose people. People would be too confused, so you have to literally tell them everything. But you're right, there's a joy to discovering stuff for yourself.
And that's what I could say with the bomb. So I didn't capture it because I only captured a little bit of footage because I didn't want to put any spoilers out there for our review. So unfortunately, I haven't got like masses of the game. I just sat down for like a couple of sessions over the time I was reviewing it and captured. But like the idea of rolling that bomb and it goes up the hill and then it sort of and it goes back down and it blows up the door and you get in there. And I was kind of surprised when I did this at one point that it was an item I needed to get into a door. Like, it's one of five. That's all I'll say. When that happened, and I was like, oh, wow, because it didn't tell me to do that at all. I just kind of discovered that.
Yeah.
Which showed how clever. And also, you know what? There's a lot of kind of FromSoft stuff in there. The shortcut nature, the world you say about the world being disconnected, each level is actually very well interconnected. You work your way back round to get a shortcut to stuff, and it's actually like I was seeing it going, I think this game is more influential than I realized.
I remember the shortcuts within the areas, I think, and I remember liking that, and I remember just thinking, wishing that it was on a grander scale. Yeah. But again, like I say, like, maybe that was naive me at the time. You know, you always think bigger and better. And that's why I really wonder if I go back to this. And I will go back to this. There's no way
I think you will very much enjoy it. Because even then, I don't care what anyone says, there are things about this that when you couple the fact that you had to play it motion controlled and swing your sword and that, and that you couldn't just swing the camera when you wanted to, that is a cumbersome idea.
Yeah.
Having that second stick on the second Joy-Con and being able to put the camera where you want it means you don't have to take every enemy on with the Z-lock. And I think it makes it such a modern game. And I am so happy. Like, I don't know how this is going to play out, because this is one of the best games I've played this year, because I didn't play it. So for me, it's a game I did play it. I just didn't play much of it. But now I've played it, I've loved it. And it's like, this is a joyous thing, and I'm happy to have filled in that knowledge, especially being that it's kind of a prequel. I would implore anyone who was like me and just did not get on with it back then, who has aged 10 years, obviously, because it's been 10 years, to have a look at the videos, have a look at stuff, listen to what we said. And it's really got me in a Zelda mood. Like, I really am now sat here going, why do I have to plug my Wii U in to play Wind Waker?
Oh, I don't. And that, I have to say, that remake of Wind Waker is like, it's so good. I remember I reviewed that and I just, I enjoyed that so much. That's a good example of how to do a remake.
But this will tell you an awful lot about me and the Wii, right? If I were to say to you, there are two Zelda games I've never finished, well, hadn't finished until now, original
Twilight
versions.
Princess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And now I'm there going, yeah. Maybe. And I was there launch day. Like, I bought it. I queued up at Tesco to get mine, and I got it, and it was there. Like, you know. And now I'm sat here after loving this on Switch. Like I say, now I have finished it. I'm like, The only two Zeldas I hadn't finished, one of them I have, and it was like, oh my god, this is one of my best games this year. And now I'm going, we maybe need a Twilight. And we'll see. I mean, I have that. I have a copy of that somewhere in the loft on Wii. I bought it. I never sold it. I have this. Yeah, doesn't matter. Anyway, we should move on. We have one piece of listener correspondence. If anyone wants to say anything in the live chat, get it in now, and we'll just get into this. It actually comes from Lyle on the team. Lyle, Mr. Funky Senpai Car. Chris, what games are you looking forward to this year that aren't getting the attention you think they should?
So this is an interesting one for me. I was trying to think. So, I mean, I always look forward to the Dark Pictures games, and I don't think many
people...
They never seem to, but then I always see a lot of noise once they've released that I think there's quite a cult following for them, and I really enjoy them. So House of Ashes is definitely one for me. I wonder... you might disagree with some of these others. You might go, I think they're getting lots of hype. I don't think Kenna's getting enough hype.
I think Kenna will get hype. I think it's a weird one, because I'm not sure who's pushing that game, whether it's Sony or a separate like public relations firm. I've heard nothing about it from Sony at all, because it's also on PC. So I wonder, I'm not going to sit here and go, like, oh, the PR is the most important thing. Smaller games, whether they look amazing and have internet buzz, need PR. That you need people to know about them. And I wonder if you ask someone who wasn't like big into the internet stuff, and would they even know what Kenna is?
No, and that's kind of what I mean.
And that game's great from what I played of it. Like, yeah, I really exactly. want to play that. That's next month.
Is that as well next
month?
That's
August, I think. Yeah, that's August.
Wow.
Which would make me think, why are they not? You know? I mean, the hands-on previews they did were very limited. It wasn't like, we'll just invite every site to play it. Like, they were very limited. But you could also have played it at the Tribeca Film Festival if you booked a slot, and that was free. So it's like, it's a bit weird. I don't think that's going to get them word of mouth by playing, you know, like a limited demo session at the... Yeah. I mean, Aliens Fireteam Elite's an interesting one, because the developer's a weird one in that they've not actually put a game out before, which means it could be great or it could be... I mean, can't say Back 4 Blood's not got hype.
No.
The Ascent's gone very quiet.
It has, actually. I've not heard a lot about that recently.
Psychonauts 2 doesn't have... I mean, it's a Microsoft game now, isn't it? And they never really bother promoting their games until it's too late. But that... Yeah. I'm so...
By the way,
this
has been out. You're like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, we know. Here's a trailer showing off. Yeah, we played it. Yeah. Death's Door, for me, I don't think has a lot of hype around it. And yet, it's a Devolver game. I think Death's Door should have more hype around it. And it's out next week. So if anyone's listening going, when's it out? Next week. That's my point exactly.
Yeah.
Death's Door. We have a question from the live chat. Are there any games either of you enjoyed immensely despite critical and general reception being universally bad? I mean, you like the Mushu games and they're all bad, so...
I think they're cathartic.
No, that's not the question. Sorry, no.
Seeing just pressing the button and seeing loads of bodies fly everywhere is, you know, I get satisfaction from hitting zombies in the head with a crowbar. I'm trying to think now
of a game that's generally critically bad. I mean, I'm trying to think. Is there a game that someone's played that reviewed it low and I loved it? I don't know. I mean, no, I don't think there is.
Not critically, because this is like universally bad. I'm trying to think of a panned game that I actually really, you know, like Secret Shame.
Yes. No is the answer.
I'm really struggling. I'll have to think about that. Maybe
maybe we could.
That's a good question, but I can't think of.
No, I really can't either. A game that is you enjoyed immensely. I want to say there's like just on the. Like, DMC, I guess, for me. I felt that was the best game in the series, and it seemed all the fans hated
it. Was that panned, was it?
I don't think critically, but general reception of that game was enough that people were angry.
He was like a snarky. He was a snarky young.
But he always was like that's what.
Oh,
Dante
I know.
Is.
But, yeah, like, I know.
No, that game still was one of my favourite on that generation, and yeah, I don't know that would be mine. I actually think Remember Me was a decent enough game. I wouldn't say I enjoyed it immensely though. I just liked it. I liked it enough to play it through to completion, and yeah. And kind of all the Resistance games as well, though they don't get much credit. I wouldn't mind Resistance coming back from PS3 era, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. And the Infamous games, always immensely enjoyed them.
Yeah, they're always just... They're,
and everyone seems to just shit on them, but I have enjoyed them. Like, the most angry I think I've ever been at a game was where I could not find the last shard in, I think, Infamous 2, and I believe it glitched out, and I could not find it, and I spent hours and hours and hours and never found it.
Infamous is just... It's one of those like fun games, isn't it? It's just fun to just get involved in and play. Like, that's how I've always found those games. And you're right, they're never 10s out of 10. They're always eights.
No, I wouldn't go that. No.
But they're the eights that you enjoy immensely when you're in the moment of playing them.
And to add to that, since they adjacent, Sunset Overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
Really liked that game. Really, really enjoyed that, and it got panned. Really. But yeah, there we go. If you enjoy this podcast, and that's the end, by the way, I didn't mean to be so abrupt, but if you enjoy this podcast, do go to patreon.com/godisageek, where you can find details about our Patreon Discord, where we do code drops once a month on the actual Discord, the Patreon itself. Follow us on social media at godisageek. You can find us on Twitter and all that sort of stuff. And make sure if you do listen to this podcast the traditional way, which is, on your iPhone or something, or on an iPod, I guess, with a circle in the middle of it, that you do go and rate and review, because that helps us go up the charts and more people find us, and then they find the Patreon, and it just helps us immensely. And, if you did watch this on YouTube, click the thumbs up, leave a comment. You answer the question. One, will you buy a Steam Deck? 1 hour later, I can remember. Are you buying a Steam Deck? That's the question for you this week. We'll try and do that. I'll try and come up with a question for you. Are you going to buy a Steam Deck? Are you excited about Steam Deck? There you go. Chris, thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure, mate.
And to everybody else, we will speak to you same time next week or whenever you choose to listen. Bye-bye for now.